preferred source for mildly pretentious, semi-uneducated, and highly unqualified opinions on movies and now TV shows. Wow. I am Kayla, and I am with my very favorite co-host,
Noah. Wow, I feel so special. Our first TV show.
Well, you are my only co-host.
I am.
You have to be the favorite.
We didn't have to mention that one. So yeah, our first TV show today, exciting times, technically a mini series, but you know, we're baby steps. We have a returning guest, today. You know him as a Santa, but,
it's me, Caroline Roberts. I'm so happy to be here. It's such a good time. I'm just kidding. I'm not Caroline Roberts. My name is Peter Kohanek. I'm happy to be here. Thank you guys for having me back for some reason. It means a lot.
Yeah. If you don't know, the last episode Peter was on was our Create Your Own Hallmark movie, where we did in fact create a Hallmark movie.
It was a good one.
It was a Hallmark movie, you know. There was aspects of Hallmark in there. This is a very different topic. We're not creating anything, but instead talking about something that was created, which is WandaVision. That was the worst intro to something I've ever done.
I've been practicing so that I can, every time that I say
really?
It.
How
I
long were you practicing?
Before you guys both joined, probably like 5 minutes while I was like setting things up, I was just sitting here going, WandaVision. WandaVision over and over and over in like different sounds and voices.
Wow.
And tones. Yeah, so let's just jump right in. I've got some brief history here of WandaVision. WandaVision was first announced in April of 2019, along with other MCU spinoff series that would air on Disney Plus. So Falcon and Winter Soldier and Loki specifically were kind of the big three that would be hitting the streaming. We thought they would be hitting the streaming sooner, but they did not. The filming began for this one in November 2019. Through March 2020, and they were almost done until COVID hit and postponed that. So they resumed in September 2020 for its January 2021 release. So quick turnaround there with some of the production. Mm-hmm. It was almost named The Vision and the Scarlet Witch, which I think was based on an original TV series or comic or something. Peter's nodding that I'm right.
The first time that they had their own book together, you know, including sort of the real development of their relationship, they were spinning off and doing their own book called the Vision and Scarlet Witch, which was a big deal to have this. I mean, because you had other superheroes who were married and other superheroes who had relationships. But these were two fan favorites who really deserved their own series and also, you know, eventually would be, I believe, and I'm going to have all of the nerds yelling at me, including probably myself internally. One of the runs, because it had two runs, one was a 4-issue series and one was a 12-issue series. One of them was a spinoff of the West Coast Avengers team, which was dealing a lot with parts of Wonder Man and Ultron and a couple of other things that are all tied into the creation of the Vision and, of course, Scarlet Witch. And so this was a big deal to have these two characters have their own thing, and certainly would have been a very leading name for the show, probably the most obvious name that they could have picked, for sure.
Yeah, it's interesting that they went with WandaVision instead because of that, and I think either kind of works. I guess they felt WandaVision better fit the sitcom universe that they were trying to build, but when they first announced it was like all these Marvel stannies and fanboys were like, no, it sounds so silly, stop. And we're like,
it's not
really
that
mad
thing that's been around for 30 years that I like. No.
Yeah, so I thought that was funny, but obviously I think it worked.
I think you have to think about hashtags now, too. Like, hashtag the Vision and the Scarlet Witch doesn't really ring. But hashtag WandaVision, you know, that gets trending fast.
Yeah, so fast.
Transmedia marketing, ladies and gentlemen.
Up until this point, Marvel Television has produced all of their TV shows. And this and the other ones, Marvel Studios was like, nah, we got it. Because this is basically also included in Phase 4. Mm-hmm. So they decided they wanted control over all of
Phase 4
products, of course.
Oh my gosh.
So they had $25 million average assumed budget for each episode. That's kind of like not confirmed, but kind of confirmed. So like a lot of money went into these episodes. And the good thing, quote unquote, is it had a diverse writing room, which they were pretty proud of, because, of course, when they finally do diverse things, they have to tell you that they did them.
Right.
So they had 8 writers for the show, 4 of which were women and multiple people of color. They only decided to do it as a weekly release after The Mandalorian's success for weekly release. I think a lot of that came from social media, realizing how much social media plays into the weekly release, which I get. I think it works as a weekly release, which we can talk about later. But they wanted viewers to try to guess what happens next, to have a week speculating or rewatching and building that anticipation. And I was
almost
like
a real TV show.
Oh, yeah, I read that and I was like, huh, yeah, that's how TV works. So it was the first release technically in Phase 4, which I mentioned.
Wild. I can't believe we are
in phase four.
I
hate that they freaking call it different phases. Like, it's just so annoying because they try to act like they're like these gods that control.
Well, it works for their for Disney Plus a lot, because when you click on the Marvel thing and they like actually have really good categories, so it really works for marketing.
Yeah,
like it's a really great idea.
I think it's fine.
I think
but
it's just
I think
weird
they,
though. Yeah,
it's overkill that they're like Phase 4. But the end of the show is supposed to connect with Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness and kind of flow into that. And then also the new Spider-Man No Way Home is supposed to sort of supposedly connect with this. The writers of all the different things were kind of in the know on everything that was happening with WandaVision so that they could sort of include small tidbits, even if their movie doesn't really revolve around it. This was supposed to release after Falcon and Winter Soldier, but I guess because of COVID, WandaVision ended up being the one that was releasing first, and then Falcon and Winter Soldier, which I think actually, in hindsight, I mean, obviously we haven't seen Falcon and Winter Soldier, but I think this was the best way for that to happen, because generally, I don't know that a lot of people care about Falcon and Winter Soldier, which we can talk about, but it feels like this had a lot more hype surrounding it over the past, you know, couple years that we've known about it. It's felt more unique almost because it really is more of a spinoff with characters we don't have a lot about, opposed to like, you know, the Winter Soldier. What I thought was funny is Schaefer, who I think was like the head writer. I don't know. Spark notes'd this.
He was there.
History. Was the apparently intern. Inspired by Thor Ragnarok and the FX show Legion for being Marvel stories that seemed outside of the box in the way they were told. I thought it was funny that Ragnarok was included in that, because I feel like that is still a very Marvel movie, even though
there's a couple things, but
it is a little different. I think it still fits the Marvel, like it fits into the kind of content they make. But I did like the nod to Legion because I think that show's great and fun and interesting. So I was like, wow, getting the old timey hits here.
You have some COVID related commentary. We have our man Schaefer back. He felt the series was suited to being released during this moment in time, amidst the pandemic, because it is a, quote, reflection of a lot of the anxiety that we're feeling and a lot of the pathos and chaos of 2020. So it feels very right to me. I mean, I get the sentiment. It's just funny, like, pathos and chaos of 2020.
Yeah, here's some other quotes very about intense. That. Esquire's Matt Miller wrote that it had incredible timing with its release, since much of the audience was collectively escaping
tired
to nostalgia.
Of not having new Marvel content. Right. That's weird. It's weird that he would, you know, it seems kind of obvious.
But he also says chaos in his, the general chaos of the real world. Similarly to what Wanda was doing within the Westview reality, and said the series was commenting on the very nature and purpose of consuming comic book entertainment, which I feel like all comic book movies do. So, really get...
That one I don't mind as much because that's like an actual like critic. So this person making the show saying that stuff is like, okay, bud. All right.
Here's the one that really was interesting to me. I use interesting in a not good way. Trauma therapist Aaron Qualley felt WandaVision was a positive representation of complex mental health issues, which I think is sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it says that her grief in the series made her quickly become one of the most relatable characters on television in the COVID-19 era, in which many were living with similar traumas. And I'm not quite sure how I feel about that, but it is generally not good. And then she added, by exploring how the process of admitting weakness can become an inherent strength, Wanda's story marks a refreshing, if temporary, departure from the usual comic book formula, and enjoyed the series was exploring a person's internal struggles.
Yeah, I mean, so... we can talk about this too, but I feel like one thing that people didn't learn, like, from watching this was they're not used to having Marvel shows being episodic, so they're writing all these things before it's over. So I feel like I'm assuming this was written before the finale, like the last two episodes or the finale, because this seems like something that was written like...
Well, she addresses the eighth episode.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And said it was fantastic that Marvel took an earnest pause to convey grief. So just interesting fantastic. Because I feel like you can get into the argument that other Marvel movies and stuff have also dealt with grief. This isn't the first Marvel content to sort of get into that. I mean, I think this surrounds grief a little more. But I also think when you look at Spider-Man, Far From Home, and other stuff, like, I don't know. I feel like that also is very directly dealing with a lot of the same concepts that they're acting like are very new.
All superhero movies, I feel like, are kind of have to, like, about grief, kind of, because it's like, well, it's like heroes complex kind of thing. Like,
it's gonna be a part of their story.
Mm-hmm.
I felt as though, honestly, even though there were some really poignant things with Wanda's story, I felt contextually of the moment we're in right now, Monica's story had a lot more of this idea of all of these things, these horrible, sad things in my life have happened, and I have had no space to deal with them. But I know I have to. And just sort of coming back after, you know, post-blip reversal, this sort of weight that came with, like, oh my gosh, there's all, like, that scene in the hospital where everyone's just popping up and not knowing what's going on. That feels more like right now, where it's like we're missing, you know, pieces of our lives that we know should be there, but they're not. And I felt like that was, like, the most heartbreaking part to me. Anytime she would be like, look, I want to be with my mom. If I had this ability, if I had this power, I would bring her back. I would do this. I would do that. And while obviously Wanda was the focus, it was too bad that Monica came in so strong, and then they just very quickly were just like, let's start moving you a little farther to the back. All right, we'll give you powers. All right, let's go a little farther to the... Okay,
yes.
All right, mm-hmm. We'll give you a post-credit scene, honey. We'll give you that, all right? We won't bring in Sam Jackson. We won't pay him, but we'll give you the post-credit scene.
We'll mention him. But not by name.
We'll give a nice big wink.
Yeah, nice. Insert the Agatha wink meme.
Right, thank you.
Yeah, exactly. Fun facts. We like fun facts. Cinematographer Jess Hall used 47 different camera lenses for the 7 time periods covered in WandaVision, which is cool. Many of which were modern lenses custom modified to keep characteristics of the actual period lenses. That's kind of fun.
Those ratio changes, like, always got me excited. Whenever, like, things would start to creep back into reality and you're like...
ratio time. I think, what was there, a TikTok or whatever that was like... I don't know. It was like episode 4. It was something like super far in where they were like, oh my word, I just realized WandaVision is in TV. It looks like TV. And then the real life is in Marvel ratio. I'm like, what is Marvel ratio?
You know, Martin Scorsese could dream of having a Marvel ratio in one of his films.
That Marvel ratio, patent pending. 2.41 by 1, you know, it's a little extra decimal place. Lighting was adjusted. LED light was used depicting the modern era, which I think the lighting was something I even noticed more than maybe sometimes, like, the lenses. Especially going into, like, the more, I think it was Malcolm in the Middle and Modern Family kind of style episodes. Like, the lighting was a lot more, I don't know, of the time period. They got that real, I think they did a good job, like, with the lighting for each period.
I agree. It always felt honest. I don't think at any point in the episodes, like, obviously it's gimmicky just by its nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt as though... You know, anytime anything that any kind of popular media does something that is gimmicky, the ones that don't really land are the ones that don't commit hard enough. And you can definitely tell that there was a lot of time and effort put into, we're going to make this look correct as possible,
mm-hmm.
Which was just, it was just astonishing and very, very cool to see that done faithfully.
Yeah, the production value of this show is very, very good.
Good job to them.
Good use of that $25 million.
Yeah. Each episode.
The 225 total. Yeah.
That's right.
Oof. It's wild.
Cool. So let's take a quick ad break. Unfortunately, we will not be having our own, little Marvel ads where they do cute little nods to things. But we will be having a regular ad. Review one, WandaVision.
This is obviously going to be spoilers, which we kind of, I think there might have been some spoilers
in the first half,
so sorry if you're like, we're not holding back. So this takes place 3 weeks after Avengers Endgame, and I don't know if I was expecting... I wasn't expecting, like, a previously on, because it's Marvel, but it's really interesting, too. Like, they really didn't give any, like, backstory for anything. So they really are expecting you to watch all the movies previously, which, I mean, we all have.
All of Phase 3.
But it's just all of Phase 1, 2, 3. It's, like, it's wild that they have this much power that they're like, you have to watch 20-plus movies, 9 episodes to be up to date. Like,
right. They did try to do some helpful lead-in type things with Disney Plus. They did, you know, frame certain titles on their social media accounts, and, you know, and I believe on the actual app, they tried to group certain things together, and then at the end of every episode, they would, like, feature Age of Ultron as being, like, sort of your core foundation. Are you confused?
Right, watch Age of Ultron.
Right. But it's still, yeah, it absolutely should have been more clear if you're not someone who's, even if you're not watching all the movies, you must be subscribed to all of our social media accounts.
But they're a monopoly and they assume that they're the hierarchy that, like...
Oh, absolutely.
You have consumed all of their content because they control pop culture. Like, that's just where it's at.
I feel like they are. Remember the episodes where, like, taking my parents to see Avengers Endgame after they've never watched any other movie. I feel like watching this without watching any other Marvel property would be probably even more confusing than Endgame.
Oh, because
Endgame
yeah,
still
for sure.
has like. The stuff you can latch on to, like, oh, it's Spider-Man, I or they're talking about Spider-Man, and then it's, yeah. It's just, this was like, you just get thrown in, and it's like, oh, okay.
Mandalorian, I think, was a more appropriate sort of way to do, I think, original content in terms of, like, episodically, because I felt like, you know, while certainly there were certain things that tied into the greater Star Wars world at large, you know, this is a new character that nobody has seen before. And so especially the first season really allowed you to be just sort of like, okay, what's going on? Let me try to, I've never been into Star Wars. Let me try to get into this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But this is like, yeah.
Yeah. It's completely just like, you have to know.
Marvel is the epitome of a production company gatekeeping.
Right. And I think, and I'm glad you brought that up because I wanted to touch on that was that, As somebody who's a fan of these things and a fan of the books and a fan of, you know, the different pieces of media, not just because it's popular, but also because it's fun and it's exciting to me. But there's this element that is so commonly discussed in the communities of gatekeeping and how that's such a big issue. And I get frustrated as somebody who wants to share these things with people and new people to bring in and have that excitement and hype over, because this enables gatekeeping, right? Like, this literally, this, like, takes everything and is like, well, yeah, you have to do this. You have to consume the content in order. It's not just I feel more rewarded for getting all the content. Mm. It's, you have to be able to access this on any level.
Yes.
Yeah. Because I would feel like, obviously, you... Like you said, you're into other type Marvel stuff and you understand the universe and all that. I would feel like I am the average Marvel viewer, maybe like slightly above average. I was really into Marvel when everything was first coming out, Avengers, Thor, Captain America, and kind of got lost in the middle because it was just it took too much energy to keep right. up with everything and the way it all connected, and then kind of got back into it. Like, I'm admitting to this, but like, I didn't see Infinity War in theaters.
Wow.
I kind of like didn't see it until right before I went and saw Endgame. I mean, after that, I kind of like sort of got into it a little more, but you know, I've tracked with some of the stuff, but even with, like, this, like, the first couple episodes I watched with my brother Luke, who understands a little more about Marvel than I do, and, like, the little nods to things and the ads and, like, you know, little things, he's like, oh, that was this, and I'm like, oh, I would not have gotten that at all, and I feel like I watch, you know, I watch all the movies and stuff. But when everyone has been making theories about this person and that person, I'm like, that's never going to be me because I don't really understand. You know, when people were like, oh, I bet it's like Agatha or this, or it's this person and they're going to come in because of this dog, Sparky, and this character in the comics killed a dog. Or like, I don't know. I just was right. like, I don't get any of it. I'm just here to watch and enjoy, but I feel like part of me gets left out on all that kind of stuff because I just, you know, don't want to take all the extra time and energy and all that to consume so much extra stuff to fully understand what's happening.
And that's frustrating for someone like you who is sort of in that middle place of casual and hardcore because you feel cheated. I'm guessing you feel cheated.
Yeah.
Because you're in like, a way, look, yeah. I took the time to watch some of the stuff. Mm-hmm. You know? And now the entire discourse is dominated by the hardcore that yeah. is just in and of itself going to keep anyone who's not on that level out.
Well, and even with the stuff that's been like the cast and crew having to feel like they're saying, oh, we're like building up this big thing. And right. then like feeding into all these theories. And then they're like, oh, sorry, you might be disappointed by the finale. Because you guys have theorized all this stuff and it's not going to be what you expect. And I'm like, right. if you didn't feed into that culture.
Well, wasn't that what they said they wanted? They wanted people theorizing. That's why they did it episodically.
Right.
Because they wanted
it's
that.
So, it, that part of it gets so frustrating to me because I'm like, I know that this is marketing and you're feeding into it with marketing. But it is affecting directly this culture that surrounds these movies, because when you say, oh, we're going to bring back a big character, and then it's just like, I mean, I still don't even know who they were talking about, like, maybe Pietro, maybe, like, right. were they talking about Agatha? I don't really know, but everyone makes this big deal, and it's like, I don't know, I just wish that it wasn't such a big, like, I wish I could enjoy it without having to deal with all this extra added stuff to it.
Somebody on Twitter said that the Luke Skywalker-esque cameo that Paul Bettany couldn't wait to work with was really just Paul Bettany talking to Paul Bettany in the final episode
nice.
With the two visions.
Nice.
Which I think is funny, like, but the problem is that they built it up so much. Like,
right.
I think
and they train
been...
us. They train us in all the other movies that any little nod or any kind of label or any kind of, and I'm not saying we need to be totally, you know, subservient or learning from what they give us. We won't, you know, obviously we need to be independent of that as viewers, but they, in a way, do train us to be like, if we mention this little side thing, maybe it's an Easter egg. Maybe it's a clue to what's going to happen next. And so we're yeah. already going in with that mindset of, what are these commercials? Does this mean Hydra's behind this? Does this mean that this is behind this? Does this tie into the Falcon show? Is this going to have something to do with the Eternals movie? I
right.
don't know.
Exactly. I think the commercials were... I mean, I love the commercials, but I do think they were weird because it's like they didn't really connect to anything, and those are definitely, I feel like, had the most noticeable Easter eggs for yeah. people that aren't like pausing in every frame. Another aspect, I think we can just touch on this now because we're here, of the gatekeeping is like how you're kind of just expected to watch every episode the day it comes out, and there's not mm-hmm. really any, like, I mean, even with stuff like Endgame and stuff, I think there was some level of respect for like waiting for people to see it before you like just openly
yeah,
discuss
maybe
it on
like
social media.
2 or 3 days.
Right. Well, that's better than now, which was literally like if you didn't watch it at midnight, you just couldn't really
yeah,
go on social
yeah,
media.
Yeah, no. And what was so crazy is like, so I was sick and at home most of the releases. And so I was able to watch it because normally I work on Fridays. So mm-hmm. I was able to watch it first thing in the morning and like not get on Twitter. But then the weeks that I was working, I had to keep reminding myself that I couldn't get on Twitter. Right. And one Friday, like, I mean, it was like 9 a.m. I'm at work. I just happened to open Twitter. And literally the first thing is like a massive spoiler for I think it was like episode 8. Mm. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I forgot. I shouldn't have to, like, you know, maybe make my phone screen wallpaper, like, don't open Twitter, WandaVision spoilers, because it just was, like, I don't know. It just was very frustrating. I agree. And then, like, this last episode, I stayed off Twitter for, like, probably 24 hours until I could, mm-hmm. you know, watch the episode, because I was so worried that people would spoil it for me, which is very unfortunate and like frustrating.
Yeah, it's like people are assuming because it's on Disney Plus, it's like, well, why? What else are you doing? Like, well, I'm sorry that I have work or I have stuff to do. Even think with the pandemic too, it plays a role because right. more people are at home anyway, and so
that's a hard thing to sort of reconcile with, and it's in a way a very privileged thing to be able to say I have a job that I can work from home. why didn't you have to go into work? You know, it's kind of ridiculous when you really break it down. This is something that I thought about was one of my major criticisms of the Netflix binge model, which I thought this was going to take away from that, where, you know, when I was in college when Stranger Things season one came out, and I could watch, you know, 4 episodes in a row one day and then 4 episodes in a row the next day. But then I was on tour performing when season 3 came out, and I was like, I'm not going to be able to watch any of this unless I watch it on my, you know, teeny tiny iPhone SE if I really want to. Right. And so I was frustrated because, you know, this idea that, like, well, this culture that, oh, we have to watch everything at once and we have to all talk about it at the same time. I thought with a weekly release, we give some people some time. Now they can consume it at a more reasonable pace. It's more reasonable to say, hey, watch this half-hour show once a week, as opposed to set aside 8 hours as a working adult. But the opposite happened, where it was instead so easy to watch just the half hour for everyone else who didn't have to go do something Friday morning.
Yeah. And they're like, oh, well, obviously you watched it. What else were you doing?
Right. It was like, oh, well, it only takes a half hour. Like, you know, I'm a teacher. I'm a long-term substitute teacher. And so I'm like, oh, I wake up at 7 o'clock. I can watch a half hour episode before I have to clock in at 9. But now that's like just totally crushed anyone's chance to watch it before getting spoiled.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is very frustrating.
Yeah,
and it feeds into the, like, because of the way Marvel has these clues, mm-hmm. and because of the way they hide these things and want to have these big reveals, that's what makes it so difficult. Because every episode, you know, oh, is there going to be an end credits scene that, like, does this? And then people post about that, and it's like, that feeds into the gatekeeping, because it wouldn't be that big of a deal if they didn't try to hype up these big reveals and right. all that in each episode. Then, like, you would say, oh, okay. Because, like, the first couple episodes, I think, were fine with that. And then once you get into the latter half of the season, it's like, oh, gosh, because they are revealing all these crazy things.
That's more Marvel in the second half.
I think that this is a good time to transition into our discussion of those decades and those the distinction between the first half and the second half of the season.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Which I think it's pretty drastic in my opinion. What were your expectations like going in? And then also I think we can maybe touch on like the first 2 episodes. Cause I think that was a big thing just because those first 2 episodes are so different and they dropped at the same time. So like expectations going in and then initial reactions to the first couple episodes, I think, is a good place to start.
I think as somebody who feels pretty deeply in it, as you could say, I felt as though my expectations were pretty in line with what we got for those first couple episodes. I think the marketing was pretty clear. As somebody who every time a new trailer or teaser dropped, I was keeping up with it, and I felt as though I definitely thought there would be more. Like, they wouldn't be necessarily taking place within that period. Mm. I thought it was going to be more, like, modern dialogue and modern, like, things like it wasn't as much of a false reality as opposed to just a differently framed and conceptualized reality. And so coming in and just sort of it very clearly out of the gate being like, oh, no, we are making it very clear that this is not something that is in touch with modern goings-ons. This is someone who is trying to shape things in a way that is comforting is very interesting. And that's another thing that I was very nervous about, that they weren't going to justify why each of the first couple of the first 5 or 6 episodes were in those styles. I thought they were going to go full, like, I had a nervousness that they were going to just be like, it's just because, you know, we wanted to do something different. But they did. And all I wanted was like a single line being like, oh, I watched these shows when I was young or something. And they ended up doing a whole sequence about it, which I thought was great. That was a great choice because that's, you know,
I liked that a lot, too.
Yeah. As a storyteller and an improviser, sometimes we will try to, whenever you do make a really weird choice, it's easiest for the audience to jump on board if you take a single moment in a scene to justify why you're doing everything so crazy. So even if everything is on fire around you and the scene is going on, as soon as you take the moment to say, well, here on the fire planet or whatever, as silly as it is, the audience in their minds will go, oh, right, they're on the fire planet. So it makes sense why everything's on fire, right? Oh, yeah. That's why he's eating fire ice cream, because they're on the fire planet, obviously. And it sounds like such a simple thing, such a simple stepping stone. But I was really nervous that for the sake of being, you know, quote unquote, you know, creative or artsy, they were going to neglect that for the sake of storytelling. And so the fact that in the eighth episode, they took the, you know, 6-7 minutes to be like, she watched these shows at different points in her life, and they were with her in a way that she could, you know, had this element of fantasy escapism, I thought was really poignant. Now, granted, when they did the Modern Family episode, I was like, huh, they probably should have done this with all Disney properties in retrospect. I'm glad they didn't, but I was like, you could have some really interesting things to say about if you're on the other side of the camera and making some of these choices, you could have some really interesting commentary on the company that you can slide past.
Yeah.
A sort of like, hey man, we're able to do all these things. Isn't that interesting that only we have the money and the ability to do this?
Yeah, that was definitely something I thought when they were kind of going through that TV sequence, like revealing that aspect. And even if they don't, they're the ones who can because of how much money they have.
Right, it doesn't matter.
Even if we don't own it, we can buy it because we have the money to put a 15-second blurb in this show.
Right, but overall, I think, to get back to the original question from about an hour ago, my overall expectation was we're going to get some kind of explanation as to what's going on with Vision, where he's at, why is he showing up. We're going to get some exploration of Wanda's grief, but also I have the understanding of some of these seminal moments of the books, you know, of the comic books. And so I already know that the character is bound or almost more likely to be gravitated in a effort to stay somewhat true or referential to the books. They are going to shape the character in a similar way to deal with the things that are in the movies by bringing in elements of things that will make the fans happy but also be consistent with the characterization that's been established for, you know, 40 plus years.
Yeah, I was excited going in. I don't read the books, I think like I really didn't know what the story was gonna be because of that. I knew that Vision was dead, as far as we knew, and I knew that we really didn't know what was going on with Wanda, so really I didn't know what the story was gonna be. I was excited for the different decade stuff. At least I don't think I was aware going in that it was going to be different decades each episode. I knew that it was going to be like the Dick Van Dyke like 50s one because that was in all the promotional material, but I didn't know it was going to switch each episode, which I did really. That was probably my favorite aspect of the show. Definitely those like first, maybe like even 2/3, because there are like the like 4th episode, I think, where it's just all backstory like outside of Westview. But that was my favorite aspect, and I really loved, I know a lot of people didn't, like, not a lot of people, but I mean, there was backlash in those first 2 episodes where people were like, what's this? Why is it black and white? Where's Captain America?
I want my Iron Man.
Yeah, I loved those episodes, and I think that got me a lot more excited for it when I saw those first 2, because I wasn't, like, pumped. I was going to watch it because Marvel owns everyone's soul. But I was really excited after those first 2 episodes because I really liked just how it felt different than what I was expecting and what they've kind of made us come to expect.
That's good though. It's cool that you were excited regardless of not knowing. And it's neat that just watching it brought you in more. That is, as somebody who, you know, as you enjoy movies and TV and well-made content in addition to the popcorn sort of pop culture stuff, that's a good thing. And I think that's certainly an achievement on the show's part in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and like I didn't care at all about this show beforehand. I was like, oh, cool, WandaVision, but I wasn't, you know, counting down the days to the release. I wasn't really watching much promotional material. It was kind of just what popped up on my timeline or whatnot. And then after I watched the first two episodes, I was like, oh, this is fun. Like, I'm going to come back to this every single week. And then, like, you know, once those first couple episodes, it was like every week I was watching it on Friday. Like, it sucked me straight into it after the first two episodes. It was like, oh, I gotta watch it every week now.
I think that's funny because I feel like most people, I keep saying most people, I should stop saying that, but I feel like a lot of things I was seeing online were like, you just gotta keep watching to like episode 4 or 5, then it's finally gonna get back to Marvel. And I feel like for me, and what it sounds like for you, Kayla, is it's like I got sucked in from the episodes that people were trying to get past.
I liked how different it was. Right. And then, I mean, like, I'm going to be honest, like, beginning of the series, those first 3 episodes, and even maybe episode 4 a little bit where they gave you the background, because right. Obviously we got these characters like Darcy and Wu, who we already kind of love and appreciate. And then, you know, up through that, I was like, 5 stars, I'm here for it, this is awesome. And then they kind of started doing these other things, and then I was like, oh man, like I thought we were gonna get something different and unique, and now they're just taking us straight back to Marvel produced content,
Marvel town.
And then episode 8, I also really enjoyed. I was really engaged. I mean, not that I wasn't engaged the whole time, but, like, you know, I whipped out my notes again. I was like, oh my gosh, I love this. I love this TV thing where they're, like, showing the progression of these things and what's
putting
creating
pieces
this.
Of the set behind the camera.
Oh, wow, it was so really cool. Good. And then, like, it got to, like, because I watched episodes 8 and 9 back to back because I just didn't have time to watch 8. And then it went into 9, and I sat there the whole time, like, ah, damn it. Like,
we were
so
close.
And, like,
this close to
you know,
greatness.
It fluctuated so much from, like, being a 5-star thing for me and then kind of dropping to maybe, like, a 3.5. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, okay, 4.5 stars. 4 stars! Yes! And then the final episode, and I just was like, ah, dang it, this is now, like, a 3-star thing. Because it just felt, I don't know, like, they were pulling in viewers, or I felt almost gypped in the sense that, like, they pulled me in with this specific kind of content, and I felt like, oh, finally we have a show that doesn't feel like Marvel content. Like, it doesn't feel like they're shoving Marvel content down my throat, and then, you know, I mean, like, it's the nature of it. It's what, I guess it's like, I should have expected more that would happen, but it was frustrating that I felt like they were finally doing something that felt so different, and I was like, oh, okay, like, phase 4 is gonna be this, like, unique and creative, and, like, they're stretching the boundaries, like, and maybe, you know, Thor Ragnarok and even, like, the Spider-Man series contributed to that, like, we're kind of going off the edge a little bit, and then it was like, oh, just kidding, haha, you thought, it's still all the Marvel content you've always had and expected, and I think that was my biggest letdown, because I don't really care about, you know, I know other people were like, oh, it wasn't big enough, there wasn't these big reveals, and that's not my driving. Like, I don't care about the reveals, like, that's not my thing. I just want to enjoy what I'm watching, feel like I connect with the characters, and have a good time, and I felt like I lost that aspect of the show when they went full Marvel. Like, that was kind of my whole experience with the show.
Absolutely. I was in the same boat. I was, like, really let down that I think both the two elements, conceptually and thematically, both with the TV show element, but also with the themes of grief and sadness and family and relationships, all these pieces of the theming, they just, it was disappointing because some episodes did it so well and hit it out of the park. And then when you have the episodes that don't do it so well, you're like, what happened?
Did you get a different writer for this one? Or did it just
right,
switch
like,
directors?
What is the difference here between one and the next? And it's very, it's very jaunting, I think, to go from one to the next, trying to tie everything together. And all of a sudden you're like, wow, there's this, you know, and whatever, you can say whatever you want about the love persevering line in episode 8. I thought it was amazing. I teared up because I'm like, I don't care,
yeah,
because
I thought
it's
it worked.
Straightforward.
Good line.
I thought it was a good line. Right. It doesn't deserve like millions of awards, but I thought it was a well constructed in that moment line. But then somebody pointed something out, I think, that set me up for failure in the 9th episode. Somebody had shared on Twitter the image of Agatha with the two boys in her witch like purple chains around their necks at the very end of the 8th episode, and she's floating there with all of her, you know, spindly wispy things and the deep eyebrows, and somebody said, if this isn't the most Disney Channel original movie looking thing. And
I saw that tweet.
I'm pretty sure it was shared by the aforementioned Caroline Roberts, and it was in that moment that I was like, oh, we're crossing over from well thought out, meticulous storytelling into this is IP.
Exactly.
And that was the main distinction. And I that was the turning point for me into that last episode, because all of a sudden now it didn't matter what they were doing visually, it didn't matter what they were doing thematically, it didn't matter conceptually. It was about a big bad ending fight scene climactic battle. And even the thumbnail of the Wanda and Vision and the kids and like the Spy Kids pose.
Yeah.
Spy Kids, yeah.
Starting to watch the 9th episode, just going in seeing that, and I was like, so is it the Obi-Wan line? We're smarter than this. How did this happen? We're
right.
smarter than this. It was like, well, I like to think of myself as a person who enjoys these things but is open to being critical and look at it in a deeper way and not letting it just sort of be what it is. Although I will enjoy it for what it is, I will then go and say, okay, well, what was the problems with it? What could have worked better? And as somebody who is like, wow, there are elements that I am very happy with critically praising of this, I am very disappointed that it just took such a dive to be just for the sake of it. It was almost like episode 8 was the finale and episode 9 was the post-credit scene to lead into the Doctor Strange movie.
Yes. Yeah.
Really.
What I feel like, I don't know, like there's always the push and pull of the creative vision of the writers, directors, and then what Marvel's obviously said, okay, this is what you have to put in the movie. You have the creative, but then you have like parts where like, okay, this is where Marvel came in. I think the Spider-Man movies, you see that the most because there's obviously like the John Hughes inspiration, but then it's like, okay, now it's time for Iron Man. So I think, but with WandaVision, I think the concept was so good, it made that contrast even greater for me because it's like such a great idea that obviously I'm like, wow. And I looking at the director's credits, like he has all these TV credits. He even starred, he like was a child actor on a sitcom I saw. So like he obviously had this amazing idea. And I feel like, to me, it feels like then there's always like Marvel like over the shoulder, like, all right, let's add in this sentence here, bud.
Which has pushed directors over the edge, you know?
One thing that I wanted to talk about, which ties into everything that you guys have both said. So I wrote notes throughout my time watching the series, and before, like, obviously I said I never theorized about Agatha's character at all. I was just like, oh, okay, whatever, she's there. And before that, like, main reveal happened, where they did the Agatha All Along cute song, which I loved, I had written in my notes that I loved... I loved the abstractness of not having a real antagonist and Wanda being her own antagonist. Yeah. And I wrote, Grief can be your own worst enemy. It can be detrimental and honestly serve as its own character, the antagonist. Mm. And in my mind, before any of this other stuff, I was like, oh, they're shaping the show around Wanda. Because once they revealed that Wanda created all this, I was like, Wanda is the antagonist. And in the end, like, the other antagonist is, what, Sword or whatever, coming in and her having to realize with, like, the people she's trapped in this that she was her own antagonist, and then she overcomes that on her own with kind of Sword prompting a
which they
bit
could
of
have
conflict.
Done. They didn't need her in the
which was
right.
how I saw
they didn't need
it.
Her.
And then that was very disappointing for me too, that they kind of felt like they had to introduce this other character for her to become the Scarlet Witch, basically. And I was like, you could have done that in a way that didn't, and not to like shit all over Agatha, because I thought Agatha was fine, but it was just frustrating that it built up to this big battle with Agatha being the catalyst for Wanda realizing her grief, when I felt like Wanda should have realized her grief on, I mean, like, she kind of did through that sequence, which I thought sort of fixed some of my issue with it. But then, like, they went into episode 9 and it was this big battle. And I was like, oh, gosh, I was so...
We were so close.
Like, yeah, because that was such a big deal in, like, notes I wrote about it. And then I was just, like, frustrated.
As a reader, it was frustrating because Agatha is, you know, while she does have some antagonistic moments, she's largely a mentor to Wanda. Because she's like, look, you have this enormous power. I am also a very powerful witch. And, you know, while there are these, you know, sort of skeletons in her closet, her first appearance, I recently was doing some digging because I had read her, I'd seen her in different books and stories that I had read, but I didn't, you know sort of her origins or first appearances. She was originally a nanny for Franklin Richards, the Fantastic Four's Sue Storm and Reed Richards' kit. Like she was a nanny, and they were like, literally, here's this crazy old lady who nobody seems to be able to touch, and she takes down this whole bad guy squad by herself. And they're like, oh, I guess he is in good hands. Like, she's not inherently a villain. And so I think the fact that they took her and made her that to begin with just enhanced for me the sort of like, you didn't have to make her. She could have been someone on the inside trying to say, hey, look, you right. are dealing with things you don't that are too big. I understand that you're sad. And there can even still be this element of like, I'm not doing this because I want to help you. I'm doing this because I want to not like the world in which I live in. I do not want to die, or I want the power that you're using to not be abused. But they didn't have to outright make her, I am trying to steal your energy.
Yeah. Right. I didn't really even get her motivation. Like,
yeah, it felt off like and weird.
They were just trying to shove it in because, like you said, they needed an antagonist, which I think they still could have had her character, but I think the story would have been exactly the same if it was just, like, Wanda realizing that, like, what she needed to do, you know? Because they still had Sword come in. It could have worked the same way.
Oh, yeah, Sword, which just stands there for 3/4 of the episode, just without guns in their hands,
just waiting. Yeah.
Waiting for the end of the episode. Same.
I think one thing that, like, we've talked a lot about the grief thing, which I do think is a little tried over the course of the Marvel movies, but I do think I like the approach they took with the theme of grief. Mm-hmm. In family, I thought they were good themes, and then with the ending scene and with Agatha, then it just turned into less about Wanda's grief and more about her identity, which I think is just so, like, I've seen so many identity superhero movies that it's like, all right, like, I don't, it's the same thing. I liked what they set up, and I think that they felt like they kind of couldn't really go, maybe they literally couldn't go as far as they wanted to because Marvel's right. like, no, you have to have a villain to fill, like, the quota.
And they still made this whole scene out of her saying goodbye to Vision, which was a very nice, touching scene, but we just saw that Vision's not really gone.
Yes. Why do they show that? That was a great scene, but I wasn't sad.
Many questions.
And then never resolve where he went to deal with his things. So, it, you know, it, in a lot of ways, it felt very like very much like Rey at the end of Rise of Skywalker, where it's like, well, she can't have this thing that she wanted. You didn't have to take away this thing. And in this case, even more so, because he's literally on the planet right now.
Yes.
But, you know, there was this element of, like, just confusion over that, and then them not even touching on him in a post-credit scene as to where he is now,
I thought it was going to be a post-credits,
yeah.
Somebody brought up the fact that, like, look at Hawkeye. Hawkeye got to have, the whole point of Hawkeye was he got to have his own little secret family and, like, be safe from everything in the world, but Wanda doesn't get that? What?
Mm.
And it's, is it because she's a woman? Probably. That's,
yeah, there's,
that's why, the, yeah. Which, yeah, comes into this whole other commentary about the overall patriarchal institutions that Disney perpetuates.
Really annoying. Because I think, obviously, they're not going to kill Vision because it's comic books and they need the characters.
Gotta get that money.
You know, so, I mean, I assumed that that was going to happen. But I feel like they could have not shown it and just had it happen like, oh, they say it like in the next movie or whatever, like, oh my gosh. Vision, before he, the other Vision died, he passed on the memories to this new Vision. I don't know. Because I felt like it undermined the whole emotional pull of the final moments. Because obviously she doesn't know Vision's alive, but we do. So, like, we can kind of semi-sympathize with her. Because it's like, okay, so she thinks she's really going through this. But we can't really fully put ourselves in her mind. Because we know that there is still another Vision coming. Because we saw that.
I did want to talk about the line, Peter, you brought it up a little bit, the scene with what is grief if not love persevering line, in context of social media and the way that this one, we have all these themes in this movie, and the way that this one line happened to overtake, like, everything about that scene and everything about social media and how that affected the perception of the show, I guess, and the way people were talking about the show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because now it's like, oh, you know, they're not allowed to be deeper, to try to be deeper. And that is gatekeeping on the film community's behalf, you know? And I understand where that comes from, certainly. I understand that when something is getting all the attention that you want underfunded projects and more creative projects to get, I understand that. But I think you have to remember there are real creatives that are involved in this process. Other expectations of what this is going to be may not even fit because ultimately there are artists working on this. Mm-hmm. Even if you do not want to classify the piece as art, even if there are things that it overcomes, I think it unintentionally minimizes the fact that the people who made this are people who have worked very, very hard to be where they are today. And that's, it's unfortunate when the two just, they can't exist in the same space.
Right, yeah. Because, I mean, there's so many people that, oh, it's not deep enough. Because, like, all mainstream things. Because they want their stuff to be taken seriously because this is what has, like, the emotional elements, this is what has the thematic elements. But when, I mean, obviously in that one scene, I think that one scene is great, and I think that when they're trying to do something like that, then all of a sudden they're like, wait, no, we can't do this. But, like, well, isn't this what you wanted? Didn't you want this?
You wanted something different.
In mainstream media? Like, because there's always going to be mainstream media, and there's always going to be underappreciated media. And so do you just want mainstream media to always be, like, empty and soulless? Or
I think that's the perpetual battle, whether it's music or film or any form of art. It's going to be, I don't like this because lots of people like this. And there is an element of coolness to that inherently, of like, oh wow, that person doesn't like this thing that I like, that, like, all my friends like. What do they know that I don't? Like, there's just this piece of it that's just very exclusionary, and people are, I think we as humans are bound to gravitate towards wanting that.
What's so interesting is I did not watch that episode until after all the discourse. So I saw all of this unfolding on social media before I watched the episode. And so because of this, I was expecting this scene to be like a big deal or something. And then I watched it and I was like, that was a good scene. And then part of me felt dumb for thinking it was a good scene because I had seen all this discourse and I was like, but I liked it. Like, I thought it was good. I thought in the context it worked. I thought the scene was sweet and special. I thought there were a lot of other great lines that also happened in that scene. And I was like, I don't know why this line specifically was the one that got really big. But it was just really interesting to look at the way that all the things we've already talked about could be seen in contributing, how it contributes to the social discourse, but also social commentary that surrounds a Marvel product, per se, because of how everyone responded to this one little tidbit. Like, literally 2 minutes. It was 2 minutes of, like, a 40-minute episode, and it was this big thing. And that's just so crazy to me that social media carries that power, that certain fans in the film community or certain Marvel fans carry the power and weight they have to, like, cause discourse about these things and to make it such a big deal. And how volatile everything becomes because you see so many people being like, oh, you're so stupid for liking this. Like, how dare you think this is art when, like, all these other movies have better lines about this. And just the way that it so quickly turns into a discussion to, like, tearing people down and saying
comparing art to
people,
art. Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm sorry I didn't watch The Aviator because I was busy watching Winter Soldier. Like,
like, it gets so dangerous and, like, I hate it. Like, it's just so frustrating.
Yeah, and I mean, I thought the memes were funny. You know, I did not laugh at the memes. I thought they were good. But I thought
I've retweeted all the memes. Right.
I thought the scene was good too, and I think that I don't understand why people feel the need to be like. I mean, because I like art house stuff too. You know, I have lots of art house movies, but I don't know why you need to, like, I mean, if you don't enjoy something, then just don't enjoy it, but don't diss other people for enjoying it because it's fine, you know?
You're mad that people aren't watching your thing.
Really annoying to me.
I will say, I think the line that I liked better in that scene, I thought that line was fine, but I think the one I liked the most or the most poignant was, it can't all be sorrow, can it?
Like, yeah, that was a good line too.
When he said that, I was like, wow, that is so true too, because grief is so all-consuming that, like, you forget there's other things. And I was like, wow, that was really good.
Yeah. Then, episode 8 really just
I loved
cut it off there. And,
I loved the expose it gives on how impactful television is for people in our generation and how different seasons and different shows. I mean, like, I watched The Brady Bunch growing up, and that was, like, a big deal for my childhood. Mm-hmm. And, like, seeing represented how these different shows actually aid different seasons of your life. And I was like, wow, that is really cool. Why are people not talking about this? Because it felt so much more, I don't know, relevant than some of this other stuff that was going on in the show that people didn't talk about.
Thinking about this and looking forward, I'm becoming increasingly confused as to why it's called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness and not the Scarlet Witch and the Multiverse of Madness.
Yes.
It's
yes.
like, why?
Do people like Doctor Strange really that much? I don't understand.
Why not take a conclusion or a sort of the coming together of WandaVision to be the foundation in the first act of this movie. But no, let's just squeeze it into a single episode, I think was really unfortunate. And I think that ending there would have been just so much nicer.
I guess that's a good place to go to looking ahead, you know. So I actually did want to say, we did mention this a little bit, but with Monica's character in the final episode, they set up a lot of stuff in this show, but especially with her story, and I know she's going to get something, I'm assuming, in the next Captain Marvel movie or something like that. I don't know. I was really let down by
because they had her get powers and everything in episode 7, was it? And then they kind of just forgot about her episode 8, and then they brought her in for to get shot in episode 9, and then that was it. Then they brought her
to
the movie
theater.
Look
what she can do. All right, now she's coming back. Now that's it. That's it.
It was like they gave her, like, in episode 9, they built her up in this whole thing, and she sees Pietro, and then, like, the only thing she does is rip off his necklace, and then she, like, takes a bullet, and it's like...
But then we don't see Pietro again.
Yeah, what's so funny, too, is, like, the way people latched on to side characters.
Yeah. Jimmy
and
Woo.
I don't... It's interesting that Marvel doesn't realize how marketable those characters are. Like, Jimmy and Darcy and Monica, mm-hmm. I mean, they could have their own show, and I think it would do just as well.
Right, and the fact that they... In the production, because they undervalue them until it comes time for, you know, Funko Pop pitches, they sideline them in the production and the development of the characters within it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure there was a scene with Darcy in the last episode that they cut.
That was what I was about to say, because I love Darcy. I love her in all her other appearances. Mm-hmm. I think she's great. I would marry her character in 0.2 seconds.
What is the line that they explain her away with? Like, she doesn't, like, whatever work or something?
Oh, debriefs
yeah,
or something. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, but,
yeah.
Like, she does all this, like, she is the one who discovers the show. She is the one who does all this stuff. She finds out that, like, the bad dude, whatever his name is, the same old copy and paste white guy who, like, is trying to take over things. She does all the behind the scenes stuff. And then, what, she crashes the fucking car into his car? And it's like, ha ha ha, I got you. And it's like, you made her this smart, cool, like, hot badass the whole time, and you're like, oh my gosh, like, Darcy is this awesome woman who, like, gives no shits to anyone, and she's, like, smart and a scientist and all this stuff, and then they're like, oh, she crashes a car. It made me so mad. I was like, ugh, it's very frustrating to me. And they're, I mean, Monica's the same way, and Jimmy Woo is the same way. Like, they do all these things, and then, you know, Woo's nod in the end is like, oh, this suits you well, like, this organizing stuff. And it's like, he just took down, like, all this stuff because he's, like, a smart, cool guy who, like, fights for truth and justice. And you're like, oh, he organizes well? Like, good
Did
Lord.
You know Agent Jimmy Woo has his own team called the Agents of Atlas, which is sort of a bizarre supernatural team that, you know, deals with different threats within the Marvel Universe, which, how much are they trying to seed? Like, because they'll do things like this where they're like, maybe if people respond really well to this, maybe we'll sprinkle some more in somewhere else. Surprise.
I hope they do. But the next show we're getting is Falcon and Winter Soldier, not the Jimmy Woo masterpiece that that
no
show
Jimmy
been.
Woo experience for us.
Rip.
Jimmy Woo cinematic universe.
How are we feeling about Falcon Winter Soldier going in? We have only a week in between releases, which I think is actually really smart.
That's Disney. What I've been saying. I think I've said it in previous episodes. I definitely have said it over text to you, Noah. But when Disney Plus first launched and they had, like, you know, The Mandalorian, whatever, I was like, there was nothing that happened after that, and they had all this steam going with, like, Baby Yoda and stuff, and then they had literally nothing that they were releasing, except maybe, like, some really dumb little kid movies. And now we're finally hitting, we've got WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, High School Musical Season 2, Loki.
Let's go.
Like, we've got all these things that are stacked back to back, and I feel like that's what they should have done.
Yes.
In because it was like, why would I have a Disney Plus subscription for The Mandalorian? But now it's like,
it definitely
there's all
felt
these
like a soft
things
launch.
That are like they're constantly giving you new content that is very social media worthy in their model right now.
Someone pointed out that we only have 2 weeks without Marvel content from here to the end of 2021.
Yep.
Wild.
They're doing
it. In between
it.
Every
They're...
episode, every show, they're releasing their behind the scenes of the show that just ended.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. That being said, I don't care about Falcon and Winter Soldier. Like, I just don't care about either of their characters that much. Am I going to watch it every single Friday? Yeah, I am. Like,
I will.
Of course.
You know, like, they're not characters that I would normally be drawn to or want to watch their content. Even one, you know, I said Wanda and Vision aren't really those characters for me either. I watch it and I'm like, I want a show about Monica. I want a show about Darcy. Like, those are my kind of characters. Mm-hmm. But I'm still going to watch Falcon and Winter Soldier and partake in the drama and whatever discourse happens and the memes every single week. And, you know, that's how they get you. That's,
isn't that wild
that's
that
the
we
draw.
Just spent like an hour and plus talking about how this one show that was like, it was good, but then it disappointed us in the end. And we're annoyed that like Marvel's gatekeeping stuff has to make us watch everything. And now we're like, yeah, well. Oh, I'll probably watch it
every
week. But
they get you. That's what it is. And it's frustrating that I know that they get me like that. Because I'm like, I don't really care, but I'm gonna do it and watch it. But like, partly I feel like I have to because everything in pop culture now is revolving around these shows and, you know, this content.
Right, it's all we have.
But at the same time, I'm like, I don't know, I want to be a part of it. Like, I want to be included, and I want to feel like I'm experiencing everything else that everyone else is experiencing at the same time. Like, I want to get the memes. I don't want to look at the memes and not get them. Like, I don't know. It's hard. It's the nature of our times. It's the nature of our culture and the nature of entertainment.
Again, going back to that streaming sort of culture, it's very frustrating to feel limited or excluded from what everybody around you is talking about,
because
that's what it winds down to. It's not just about I don't know what happened, it's that I don't get to communicate with the people I care about.
It's everything too, and it's such a short amount of time. Even with like, so Netflix released I Care a Lot with Rosamund Pike, which isn't a great movie, but a lot of memes. I didn't see it until like 2 weeks after it came out, and no one was talking about it when I saw it, you know? So I didn't get to participate in any of like, there wasn't really discourse, but there's always like something around like the big releases, you know? You have people talking about it, like sharing the funny screenshots. But if you don't watch something within like the first 4 or 5
right
days
away,
of it being released, then
you
don't
miss the moment.
You miss it out. No one's talking about it anymore. Even with stuff like this, where we have to release like, if we release a review of a movie that came out 2 weeks ago, it's going to do much worse than it would it's all currency and how streaming works, because everything's coming out, new things every week. So that's how it works now.
Yeah. Wow.
Et cetera. But about Falcon and Winter Soldier, I think we're just going to be wondering the whole time, when are these men going to kiss? And it's not going to happen. And I hate that. I really hate that.
It's a real bummer. A real bummer.
Yeah.
That's all we're going to be thinking the entire time.
Yeah.
And
this,
that's all the memes will be about. That's all the memes will
be
about.
Right. I didn't even think about that. Yeah.
Six episodes. Because, and the other thing is, like, Chris Evans has already said, like, you know, maybe I will go back to being Captain America. I think we're going to see a Chris Evans cameo as old Steve, almost certainly. But it's like Falcon and Winter Soldier very much looks like very sameness formulaic Marvel. Which is fine. I like that. I enjoy that. But when you have that, when you have something like WandaVision that's trying to be something different, and you're like, great, we're having something different and something normal, and then WandaVision ends up being this, you know, a third of it being so normal, it makes me less excited for the normal. It almost makes the normal not its own thing anymore, because it's just more of the same. And so I'm very hopeful for Loki. I'm hoping Loki does some more like Thor Ragnarok, where it's like, pretty much the same, but maybe have some weird cosmic pieces to it. But ultimately, I don't think we're going to get anything too different again until, fingers crossed, Hawkeye, which I really want them to do differently. It's taking a lot of cues from Matt Fraction and David Ayer's run, which is one of my all-time favorite comic series. But knowing how they treat the character as very much a, he's here too, I'm not super optimistic.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. It's going to be interesting. We got a lot of Marvel content coming, so. Well, that was certainly a review. I think all of us are middling positive. Positive middling, yeah, you know. Like, I'm definitely not negative on it. I think I'm glad it exists. I'm glad I watched it. Like, you know, there was definitely a lot of stuff I really liked about it. Just a couple things, you know, especially towards the end, you didn't wrap up the way I wanted, but that's right. Life. That never wraps up the way you want.
Huh? Cool. So, Peter, do you want to share where all our lovely listeners can hit you with a follow?
I will be, I am online at twitch.tv/becauseimpk. That is my official Twitch channel. I am getting back into a regular schedule for at least every Saturday at 2 p.m. is what I'm aiming for. But you can also find updates on my, it's super good for my marketing that my brand is all different accounts. You can find me at Twitter. On Twitter, at Peter Kohanek, that's K-O-C-H-A-N-E-K, at Peter Kohanek, or on Instagram at The Real Peter Kohanek. So twitch.tv/becauseimpk, at Peter Kohanek on Twitter, and at The Real Peter Kohanek on Instagram. And if for whatever reason I'm not streaming or streaming on a different time or day, that will be all up on there.
Cool, yeah, beans.
We'll put those in the show notes.
Thank you very much.
You can check those out.
And we also have multiple handles on multiple platforms. So instead of reading them all off, you can search Secondhand Film Critics and find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and whatnot. And if you have comments, thoughts to share, maybe you disagree, maybe you agree, maybe you want to tell us your WandaVision opinions as you're listening and you're like, oh my gosh, that made me think of this thing. You can hit us with an email at secondhandfilmcritics@gmail.com. And if we get that, we'll share it in a future episode.
Our next episode got another Disney Plus property because Disney Plus, you know, is just owning all the content right now. Kayla, what is our next episode?
We will be reviewing the new Disney original movie, Raya and the Last Dragon.
We haven't seen that as of the recording, but I'm excited because it's getting good reviews. So.
Kelly Marie Tran is a star. She is perfect.
Queen! Our
she
queen!
She has ascended from social media to become even somehow even greater.
Yeah.
Kelly Marie Stan.
All right. Wow. Well, choices.
Cool. Until the next time, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Noah.
And I'm Peter.
And we're
Secondhand Film Critics.